You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of April 13th, 2022, and the hot video game summer is canceled.
Experience Points Podcast. I'm George Alborn.
My name is Scott Juster.
This is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And sometimes they can be challenging. They can be a little hard, if you will. You were talking a little bit today about Tunic and Elden Ring and some difficulty. And then we might have some other news to talk about. Well, where would you like to start?
Let's do a little news grab bag. I've been following a little bit of the Elden Ring various patch notes. And of course, yeah. I had just finished playing Tunic. And so it kind of people were talking about the concept of, you know, how the games implement their difficulty and, you know, how they challenge players and so on. And so I wanted to get your thoughts on it.
Right. And FromSoft, I mean, these games are notorious for it. Like, not just notorious for being hard, but notorious for starting egregiously long and complicated conversations about the value of difficulty.
Yeah. You know? And here we are, you know, it's a similar thing, with a couple tweaks, I think, cause just the massive popularity of it puts it under more of a microscope, I think.
For sure. Absolutely. Well, and because it is in fact more accessible than any other Soulsborne.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of people for the first time being confronted by that challenge and that difficulty and overcoming it, or finding themselves, I guess, conversely deciding to quit, not play the game anymore.
Well, and we didn't talk about this at all when we were talking about Tunic, but Tunic is a weird combo because it is heavily influenced by the Dark Souls style fighting mechanics. There's a stamina meter, there's a roll with explicit invincibility frames, there's in some ways it's more punishing than the Dark Souls when you run out of stamina, like you actually take more damage than you do normally, other than just not being able to block. So
sure, yeah.
There are some pretty punishing components to it, but they are pretty flexible in terms of implementing different difficulty mitigators.
Right. So my understanding is they have like difficulty modes, but more than that, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can basically toggle things on and off. Like you can, there's kind of like a no fail mode where if you run out of health, you still have the health bar, but if you run out of health, it doesn't restart.
You just don't die.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. You can just keep going. And you can also get rid of stamina too. So, you know, depending on, you know, maybe you do still want the health, but, you know, the rolls and the...
Why would you get rid of the health, but not get rid of stamina? Doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose? Like,
it
you're
is
already
strange,
God mode. Like, why break it down?
I mean,
I guess to practice?
I was just going to say, in a weird way, it feels kind of like bumper bowling. You know, yeah. You could still do it and still play.
I don't
by
think
the grown-ups same rules.
Are allowed to do that, actually. I think if you're an adult, you're not allowed to use bumpers.
I mean, maybe I would actually like bowling if that was the case, you know.
I fucking hate bowling. Are we agreeing
same.
On this podcast?
Oh my god, finally. I
I'll
knew
never
we were
understand,
soulmates.
Dude. Like, I'll never understand why people like bowling. It's one of the most boring group events I can think of.
Can we, like, okay, like, let's side note on the game design of bowling for a second.
Like, and I'm sure people are hating us right now, so apologies.
Whatever. You come for these hot bowling takes, here they are. So, like, what kind of weird game or hobby, like, most of it, you have to go up and not face anyone else, play one turn at a time, non-collaboratively, and then go and sit a turn out and, you know, for 15 minutes or whatever, just to throw another fucking ball down the like, just from a design perspective, it's nuts, you know?
This is exactly the issue I have with certain types of board games.
Yeah. Just the way that they cycle players in and out, the way that the scoring works, like all of that stuff is just kind of crazy in terms of making a compelling to play or watch game. I don't know, whatever. I have major problems with
this bowling. Is why they don't let me in bowling alleys, because I will rush to the back and try to like manipulate the pins as they throw them, you know, like add some interactivity into the whole situation.
Why not throw a pin down the lane and hit a bunch of balls? I don't know, like, come on, mix it up. And also, you got to get weird, you know, any place where you have to go in and wear someone else's shoes is suspect already to begin
with. That's very true. Yeah,
gross.
Anyway, so you're putting on those bumpers is essentially because it's letting you experience a simulacrum of what it's like to play the game without actually committing to the challenge.
Well, and it doesn't. I think that is the most interesting thing, because it doesn't change the behavior of the enemies or your controls or the number of enemies or anything. So like, I that's one of the main things that I get hung up on when I'm trying to decide what difficulty level to play at, is like, crap, what is the true version, you know? Mm-hmm. What is the truest version to the vision of the game, you know? And I think that this way of implementing difficulty is smart, because it doesn't mess with the mechanics, it just messes with the consequences of the mechanics.
Sure. Yeah. So, but I mean, it's not like you can say take less damage, right? It's not as robust as that.
But that's what I mean. In a way, I like that more, because you're still experiencing the uncut nature of the game. But sure, if you truly just want a more laid back experience, you know, like I was thinking about it in terms of a Souls game, where, you know, you can see it is entertaining. It, to me, it's inherently entertaining to see how much damage like one boss's hit does to you. But yeah, the cost is that you're just going to die a dozen times before you make any progress. Whereas like, what if they implemented that difficulty setting in Elden Ring, where you can, it doesn't change the damage values, it doesn't change the attacks, it just changes whether or not it kills you. And then you could kind of see, sure, the true nature of the game without it being kind of compromised.
Yeah, I mean, we have been asking for boss rush options in the Souls franchise forever, because it's fun to fight a boss, or it would be nice to be able to take on that challenge again. I think what I like about that concept in a Souls-born scenario, or really any setting that has sort of large boss fights, is I can imagine a situation in which, okay, I cannot die to the boss, but also the boss cannot die to me. And I'm just opting in. I'm just opting into like
an unending hell.
It's a practice session, right? Like, especially relevant for bosses that have phase twos, right? Where if I could just trigger phase two, but then I couldn't progress.
Yeah.
It means that I could practice phase two over and over and over and over again until I learn those maneuvers, right? It can be frustrating to go through that phase one again and again. And what I would like about that option as well is it would then enable for you to say, okay, I'm ready. I'm going to commit. This is the real run, you know? You're still executing as best you can. You're just making that practice a little bit easier and really coming at it at the terms that I think most Souls bosses want you to, which is, we want to teach you and I want you to learn, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how many times did you fight like Dancer of the Boreal Veil before you realized like, okay,
oh my God,
I need to dodge to the right on these attacks and dodge to the left on these ones, you know? Like,
I mean, I haven't even played the game as much as you, but I still have like nightmares of that cutscene in my head, because, you know, you just like see the monster coming down from the top or whatever. Like, I can picture it in my head so clearly.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite bosses, and I love fighting bosses like that. I think Elden Ring actually has a ton of great bosses that have notable like swing animations where you can really learn them and really learn to like roll and dodge into them and be effective in that way. But I do quite like the idea of being able to practice by tweaking that difficulty option. Cause again, it doesn't, I don't know if like, if you legitimately could add that option to boss fights where you can't beat the boss, but they can't beat you. Wouldn't that be kind of nice? Because you're not violating anything that the Soulsborne franchise wants from you. Right. Mm. Like, you're still learning. You're still executing it. It just lets you practice.
I mean, it is like a training room in a fighting game where you can just set it up, you know, like what phase, what sort of style, what sort of, you know, attacks or something. Like,
that's a good comparison. Like, it's kind of surprising that we haven't gotten training rooms in games that do really rely heavily on sort of large scale bosses.
I wonder if there's some sort of, Like, do you think that's a philosophical thing? Or
I do.
I think
it's a technical mostly thing. Well, that can't be technical because we've seen people do like hilarious videos where they summon bosses to fight each other, right? And clearly it's possible to just spawn a boss,
right?
You know, and tweak whatever parameters you need to limit their damage or limit their health dropping or what have you, right? So it's possible. I think from, I don't know, I mean, maybe from a certain design perspective, it sort of saps it of any serious tone, right? Like, if you're not doing any damage, the boss feels less real, right? Mm. And we and many others have talked about the Soulsborne difficulty, and I think that I understand and respect people's desire for accessible games that give you options so that anybody can play it and enjoy it and experience the story. But at the same time, I also want to understand and respect the design points of view of FromSoft and Hidetaki Miyazaki for wanting to create a world that is real, right? That feels real, that feels punishing, that is trying, and that tests you in an uncompromising way. And I think if you were to have this option, well, really cool for someone that loves taking these games and experience them over and over and over again, I could absolutely see how it could sap a fight of its allure and its thrill and its you know, sort of narrative wrapping that comes with it.
I mean, the so much of that of those bosses in the game, you kind of have to, you know, you have this Dune-like moment where it's like, okay, fear is the mind killer. This is just a very big thing. I can ignore the fucking crazy music and, you know, earth-shaking steps that it's taking and just kind of see past it into the animation or whatever. So, like, one could argue that a training room does rob it of that mystique.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the dancer fight is a great example. That fight is so memorable because it is so evocative. It's, I mean, and the room lighting itself on fire and the music and, you know, the veil itself sort of swinging around that boss is just so cool, right? And there's so many bosses like that, that, you know, when you enter the dungeon, you know, you walk through that fog door, you have to be like, okay, I'm ready. I'm gonna try to learn this, right? I mean, there are boss fights from the Souls franchise where I would go into a boss fight saying, I'm not looking to learn phase two. I'm not looking to learn how to parry. I'm looking specifically how to dodge this one attack.
Yeah.
Or conversely, you'd say, okay, I'm gonna learn how to parry this boss. And you'd go and you'd get, you know, your ass handed to you time and time again, because all you're doing is figuring out, well, which of these moves are parryable, and of the ones that are parryable, what is that timing that I can do for it, right? And being able to go in and commit to that and knowing that you're going to die and have to take those lessons, I think that that is also part of that philosophy, and I think is part of the really rewarding feeling that having a sort of practice room would sap. But then we miss that other opportunity of really truly being able to, I don't know, revel in it. And I don't know, maybe it's an option that you get once you beat the game.
Then you can kind of, for dedicated people that want to test out a different path or a different approach or something.
New builds, new challenges, speed runs, whatever, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So a couple more news hits here. Let's talk about two things that are not happening in 2022.
Okay.
Okay. Thing number one that was much more predictable. Breath of the Wild 2 is not coming out in 2022.
Ba 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 ba.
0 to 10. How 10 being the most surprised? How surprised are you?
At like 1 or 0.
Yeah, I was gonna say -1. Perhaps.
I think we called it right because was there a trailer though, right?
Well, they put out. I mean, they're probably kicking themselves for putting out a trailer when they did, but they put out a trailer. Gosh, 2 years ago or something. I mean, it was.
We haven't gotten a trailer since.
I don't think so.
I thought we got one in March or at like Sony State of Play or something this year or late last year.
I don't think they've done another one since that initial kind of where he's like falling through the sky. Trailer.
Okay.
But I. It makes me wonder, just on a broader scale, though. Why it's Nintendo of all people, right? So Nintendo, people will buy their games no matter what.
Why announce games at all?
Why even announce games, period? Like, wouldn't it be so crazy to just be like, hey, Breath of the Wild is coming out today?
As someone that whose job is in video game marketing, I love the idea of dropping a game the day that you announce it. You know,
well, especially if it's of the caliber of Zelda, like you don't need this huge like groundswell grassroots campaign to like talk up this new kid on the block. His name's Link. You know, it's like you know who it is. You know,
I mean, and for the right game, right? Like the peak excitement is that moment. It's right when everyone's like, "What? There's a new what?" You know, and then it's like, "Oh, and it's available right now. Go and get it." Like, "Oh, that's so hyped." Yeah, I mean, whatever. I'm sure they're shooting themselves in the foot a little bit, but. At the same time, it's the opposite is also true. Fuck it. Who cares? They're going to play it no matter what. You know what the weird thing is, though? The weird thing is Nintendo does the classic announce or delay thing, which is always a little bit strange from the perspective of Westerners like ourselves, which is they do a very formal apology.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, they did the video where they bow really deeply and like, we are so sorry that we could not deliver this game to you. You know, and it's like, it's okay, my dude, it's just a video game. It's not like the next COVID vaccine, you know.
That's the thing. Link he's hang gliding around the world looking for that next sweet mRNA update. I think, well, they have a few of these hanging around now. Like they have Breath of the Wild 2, they have whatever the hell's happening with Metroid.
Yeah.
And they have Bayonetta 3. That's right. Like, God, that thing got announced a long time ago, too. So it's like there's now just like a few mystery games floating around over there. And so it just must be nerve-wracking to, you know, have to deal with that.
I do wonder whether or not Japanese studios have been hit even harder than most others due to the remote work situation. My understanding is just culturally and like business decision-wise, being physically in person in the context of Japan is far more important.
Yeah,
because of the chain of that, decisions have to sort of follow along.
Yeah,
versus being sort of spread out, especially when so many studios were already spread out internationally. Yeah. But I mean, I don't know, you know, because I know still even a lot of decisions from Nintendo when it comes to everything about their games, including marketing and release dates and whatnot, are all made out of Japan HQ.
Yeah.
And if those people aren't in the office talking with one another and then everything gets delayed internationally, like, I don't know. And then just from a design perspective, you know, if that studio's struggling, I could see COVID having very real impacts that they did not anticipate, despite, you know, multiple years of being able to get their acts together.
Yeah. I don't know if this was the case for all Japanese companies, but there was... there was not a lot of remote work in Japan. I mean, there was some, and certain companies kind of mandated it globally, but it wasn't as much of a centralized push as it was in many other areas. And so, but I think it did, I think they have, well, during the kind of December, January, 2021, 22 timeline, I think they ramped it up during the Omicron surge, but I don't know. It's more, it was just a little bit, and it didn't really hit them as hard either, like the early parts of the pandemic.
They're not doing so great right now, I believe.
No, they're not. But I think they had this weird time frame, and, you know, for whatever reason, the first couple phases of the pandemic, they didn't get as hit hard by. And so there was still a lot of in-person work, but you're right. Maybe there is just, I also do know that, to your point, like, I work with people in Japan, and it is like much, much more face in the place type of culture. Like, you have to go visit people. This meeting has to happen before this meeting. Like, it's very like, you know, there's an order to doing things. And so I could definitely see that messing things up.
That being said, though, I'm surprised that a company like Ubisoft, based in France, where everyone kisses each other on the cheeks and stuff, like, you know what I mean? Other companies like ourselves have managed okay.
Yeah, I also just think Nintendo is kind of a mysterious black box. You know, it's hard to know what's going on in there. But anyway, yes, approximately negative surprise on that.
If a game studio had a severed floor, it would be Nintendo. It would have to be Nintendo, right? I mean, is there any other company that maintains its secrecy to the degree that Nintendo does?
Maybe we're severed and we work at Nintendo. We don't know.
Sign me up, man.
Maybe I should be getting back to work right now and getting Breath of the Wild out there.
What's that one hate about this whole severance problem? That sounds like an innie issue, all right?
Yeah. That's that guy's problem.
Yeah.
Okay, other thing that is not happening this year.
Yes.
The Electronic Entertainment Expo.
Yeah, you know what's wild about this story? And this, I think, released a couple weeks ago.
It was a few weeks ago. We just never talked about it.
0 to 10 surprise. Like, what, 2?
Three? I am actually somewhat, like, I am kind of, like, at a... I'm, like, at a 4 or 5 surprise level. Okay. Because, like, it seems like they... It seems like they wanted it. And to me, it's almost like if it doesn't happen now... They're saying that they're going to do it in 2023, which I guess, sure, maybe, but it seems like it is much harder to do it in 2023 if you do not do it this year.
I agree. I think what I was most surprised by was that they abandoned the idea of even doing a digital equivalent, because they did one in 2021.
Yes.
Where they, you know, they had announcements and live streams and it was like a big thing. I mean, you and I don't know, like, the insider scoop, yeah, what the value was, right? Like, E3 is a bigger thing, right? Like we've discussed before, it is business meetings and handshakes and a lot of sort of behind closed doors operations that happen at E3 every year. There's also a ton of value that they get from selling space at the convention on the show floor. I know, like, internet is like crazy expensive, right?
Yes.
So like all those things are difficult to account for in a digital space in terms of understanding what is the ROI for ESA to put that together, right? And I don't know off the top of my head how it performed compared to, say, like other digital events like that EA has done or Microsoft has done or so on and so forth. So I don't know how big it was, but it felt to me that in order to maintain that sort of mind share, that sense of relevancy in regards to big gaming events, they needed to have a digital presence. And I was very kind of shocked that they abandoned that entirely. Now, I kind of suspect that they were looking at cases and they're like, you know what? Things are going pretty good. Yeah. We don't got to worry about COVID. Like, let's just plan. Omicron came and everyone flipped out. Yep. Deals were canceled. People pulled out.
Yeah.
Negotiations were stalled in regards to people coming to E3. Everyone realized, okay, there's no way for us to be able to actually plan with any certainty.
Yeah.
And at this point, is it or is it not too late to do a digital event?
Mm-hmm.
If the digital event is not better than last year, it'll look like a joke.
Yeah.
You know, so at that point, you know, what do they do? Like, how do you get people to participate in a digital event? Like, what is the value of having people? You're not getting them to pay. You know, like every major publisher does their own online announcements all the time. How important is it from a digital perspective to tie your name to the ESA? Like, that doesn't make any sense. So I don't know.
Everyone has their own production companies right now, you know, either in-house or third party contracted, you know.
For sure. And again, everyone has gotten pretty good at it. You know, a lot of publishers have huge digital events that include drops and influencers and like live goodies and the releases of games day one at the moment of announce. Like there's so much fanfare around digital events now that I think people have just gotten better at it and they're more mature in it and they can execute at a scale that would be weird for them to say hand off to the ESA, right? So I think maybe when you think about it, it makes sense. But from a relevancy perspective, I agree with you. Like, what does 2023 look like? Like, let's imagine COVID's completely cured, not an issue at all. Doesn't it still feel like the relevancy here is going to be a challenge when you've basically not had a major event? You've done one in the past 3 years, and even then it was kind of a not great digital event?
I completely agreed. And I think there's the company-run productions, you know, which are, I think, increasingly competent and of high quality. And then there's the which means, like, okay, what are we even doing with the ESA? Like, is it an effective lobbying firm? Is it an effective business advocacy firm? You know, what are we getting, you know, for even being a member of the ESA, let alone, you know, going to E3? which is an uncomfortable question for them. And then there's also, I mean, there's the Keeley factor. Keeley, he's eating everything. You know, I mean, what
if you can't stop him?
You can't stop him. He's a huge Katamari ball of exclusive trailers. I mean,
he got the Elden Ring announce. You know,
that's what I deal. I mean, it's like Apocalypse Now. Like, I'm in here, and Keeley's out there getting stronger. You know,
I mean that's so again, like that's the kind of wild thing about not doing a digital event, right? Like, I remember last year, Jeff Keeley, like that team had to go around to other studios and get their buy-in and get these big companies to say, yes, we want to give you an exclusive. Because why would you give Keeley and their team an exclusive when you could hold it for your own digital event, right? Like, everyone's doing their own digital events, so our digital event has to be the best. Otherwise, what are we doing handing you something and then maybe we shouldn't do it at all. We'll just hand it to Keeley's team, right?
Exactly.
You know, all the people at the Game Awards. So it makes sense that you would need to defend your turf against that, right? Yeah. Like, because this year, especially after last year's, right? Okay, so E3 is not happening digitally at all. If you're a company that wants digital presence and you're not doing your own digital event, it does make sense to give Keeley these exclusives.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, let his machine do the marketing, you know? That's the benefit of something like that.
And then the maturity and the expertise that he's built on his team is bigger and better, right? Like, there's no doubt in my mind that this year, especially with E3 out of the way, it's going to be a really great event with some actually really legitimate and cool announcements, right?
Yeah.
I was genuinely surprised that he got Elden Ring.
Yeah.
And when he announced it on the live stream, he looked genuinely, like, so enthused. Yeah. And hyped, right? Of like, we fucking did it. Like, you know, how many hours in a room did he have to negotiate with different teams around the world trying to get, like, the hottest scoops? And he's like, you know what? We got one of the best games, and it is one of the best games, hugely successful this year, right? Like, I do think that people, major publishers, are going to want that top slot this year. You know, they want that that marquee title. We're going to be your capstone to that announcement. And again, with E3 out of the way, like, why, you know, 2023 comes around. Okay, fine. You have an online event. The ESA released an announcement about this cancellation. And they said, we'll come back in 2023, yes, with a physical event, but also a digital one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But it feels like you're already going to lose, you know? Like, I don't think Keeley's going to want to give that back. And I don't think a lot of publishers, especially ones that can't compete from a physical perspective or really show up in that regard, I don't see why they would come back.
We talked a little bit about this before, but I don't think, well, this is like a backhanded compliment, but I don't think a digital event this year could have been worse than last year, you know, because I think last year was pretty lackluster. I mean, they just kind of showed some stuff. It wasn't, you know, Keeley's event was much better.
Yeah.
And so, you know, is it worth it to, like, just jettison it completely, you know, and cede that ground to people? The thing that I would hope that they're working on is talking with developers and talking with the, you know, the Googles of the world to have an interactive E3 next year, a truly digital interactive E3. Sure. Where it's like, oh shit, it's the next season of Halo, or, you know, GTA 6 is coming out and you can play it streaming in your browser right now thanks to the magic of Google Stadia. You know, like, I think, like, that sort of truly a true digital event, not just a video that you're watching, is necessary to move this forward.
Yes.
Or what I would if you hope that's what they're doing, you know?
What if you bought a ticket to E3, a digital ticket?
Yeah. Right?
And now you can access all of the games that were announced 2 weeks early on your Game Pass or your PlayStation Plus subscription. Yeah. You know, I mean, again, like, that's a wild out there idea. I don't think that's realistic at all. But the point being is, right, I think you do want to be sort of pie in the sky.
I mean, you have to be truly relevant. It's not like everything's impossible till you do it, you know, like yeah. we never thought that yeah. we'd be, oh my God, can like PlayStation and Microsoft players ever play the same game together? And it's like, never, never, never. And then it happens. Right. And so yeah. it's like, I just feel like,
are we ever going to be able to walk in 360 degrees in a Pokemon game?
Oh my God, never. Here it is. Like, I just think that like something of that, getting a deal done of that nature is required to keep the event relevant, because even if you're going to try to get the public to it, it's not PAX, you know, it's not designed for a fan convention, but I don't really see the value of a company doing it, because they could just do it via their own production company. And the players are just watching videos anywhere. Like they're watching it on Twitch or whatever. Like, so it's like, what are you actually doing? And you would need to get something that is just so much more extreme and so much more innovative, and just think way bigger about yeah. access and, you know, ability to directly interact with people. I mean, I don't know.
But, but at that point, like, okay, let's say you're Sony or Microsoft. Why would you make that deal? At this point, you're better sort of just doing it yourself. Do a Sony State of Play where you're doing the exact same thing. I mean, they're not, right? Like, yeah. I don't even think Sony or Microsoft, I think very few publishers in the industry are really sort of breaking too many boundaries, because, I mean, to be perfectly blunt, it is still the early stages of figuring some of this shit out.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
a, you know, COVID, post-COVID world, but.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you're right. There are some where the ship has just sailed. Like, Nintendo's never going to do it anymore, because they realize that, like, holy shit, people love these directs. Like, great. You know, we don't have yeah. to do anything. But I think there are other publishers out there. And, you know, I think on Microsoft's part, they have actually been more aligned with the ESA, you know, than other companies of late. And so, like, I could see something, especially the Game Pass thing, where it's like, what a way to drive Game Pass subscriptions. Where it's like, if you subscribe to Game Pass during this E3 window, you're going to get early access to all of these things. You'll be able to stream them yep. immediately. You know, like Microsoft has an incentive to do it.
I mean, you could have, like, if you're watching live, there's drops, right? Like,
exactly.
Connect your PSN account while you're watching live on YouTube, and we're going to drop a bunch of content. Not only will you be able to play the game early if you subscribe to Game Pass or you're already a subscriber during this yeah. live stream, but you'll also be able to unlock exclusive rewards that we're dropping during God. This broadcast. Great.
Fucking a new hat for Mr. Halo. It's this one has bunny ears. You like the cat ears?
I mean,
like,
it could be, you know, it could even be more robust than that. It could be get a month of the Game Pass free.
Oh my God.
You know, like.
Yeah. That's the sort of thing that I feel like because they are not choosing to do in this year, whatever is happening next year better be huge.
Yeah.
Or else, like, what are we even doing? Like, you've just kind of admitted that other people are doing it better, and it's not even worth doing this year digitally.
But here's the thing. I've lowered my expectations about all years to come. You know, like, look, the honest truth from a lot of different perspectives, right, is I think 2020 was like, man, COVID sucks. But going into 2021, this is the year. Vaccines are out. Things are going to be yeah. better. And I think by
like,
all...
Like, oh, God, it was worse.
Yeah, by all metrics, 2021 was pretty fucking humdrum also, yeah. you know, in terms of like what you could do in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and 2022, it's not started off strong.
Yeah. The jury is out.
Yeah. Like what is the reason to believe that 2023 will come out and we will be in a world where it makes sense to have a huge in-person event, you know, let alone yeah. like just even the psychological processing that would go into, you know, again, even if COVID was done for.
Yeah,
people generally now know that if you wear a mask, you're less likely to get fucking swine anything. Flu. Yeah, yeah exactly. The flu, yeah. like a yeah. cold. It's yeah. just, it's just a scenario where I don't think that the return to normal is going to be an instantaneous thing. And so to opt out of a year to me feels like throwing in the flag.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe it evolves into something totally different, but. The idea that it could come back.
They'll come, like, to okay. your house.
E3 in your house. Well, we brought in some extras to really simulate the E3 experience. They're going to stand in front of you so that you have to wait in line.
Nintendo kind of did that, right? Because I think at E3 one year, they did Nintendo Directs and then had Smash Brothers playable at like six Best Buys.
There was a lot of
Ohio
Smash.
And stuff. It was so yeah. weird.
I feel like they did like a tour, like they did like a nationwide Smash tour or something.
It was a
like
Best
Buy,
I think it was a Best Buy deal. Maybe it was a Walmart deal. In either case, it was like exceedingly difficult to actually play these games.
And then they forced you to buy a $50 HDMI cable to even get a peek at it. So that was,
and then you know, only gave you cool. Japanese sword characters.
We have so many sword characters unlocked for you to peruse.
Finally.
Oh man! All right. Any other quick news hits before we wrap it up?
Can I just? I do want to mention that Brandon Sanderson, who the famed fantasy author. Mm-hmm. Said that FromSoft reached out and they'd want to work on a game with him, and he already has ideas. I think I just want to put the positive energy out there to make it happen.
Yes,
because he's a very good author, and George R. R. Martin did jack shit on Elden Ring. Come at me.
What if we found out that he was responsible for something extremely esoteric in Elden Ring?
George R. R. Martin.
Yeah, you know, something that is like, he's like, those bears. That was me. I fought for the bears. You know, this game needed bears.
I mean, maybe. Well, what if he was like, oh, Patches was my idea from day one, even the first Dark Souls.
I had emailed them years ago.
I am Patches. Did you see that people were saying the names of all of the major gods are all start with G or R or M? And he officially said it was not his idea and it was an accident, but oh, I don't
man.
Know.
That's so... I don't know. Oh, man. That's such a great
Godfrey,
coincidence.
Godfrey, Godric,
yeah.
Rinala.
Radon.
Yes, Radon, Mikola, Milena. Like, come on, dude.
Man, that's something that's so coincidence? Great that they should make it true.
Right?
You know, when the don't let the truth get in the way of a good story. You know,
100% agree. Yep.
For Sanderson, he is a fantasy author, right? So like it is well within the realm of possibility that he would be like well versed in kind of what the tone of one of these games would be.
Yeah, I mean, and he's touched a bunch of genres, right? We were talking before we were recording that he did a novelization for Magic the Gathering, so he's done licensed content. He finished The Wheel of Time, I believe, so he's got like epic fantasy under his belt. He's done some dark fantasy work, so yeah, I mean, I have no doubts that he would be a great writer to partner with a Souls game. I also think that he plays games. Like, he understands the ethos that FromSoft brings to their title. So, yeah, I think he would be a very talented ad. I mean, fuck, add him to, like, Armored Core. Let him write some sci-fi.
Oh, my God. Yeah, they a revitalized Armored Core, you know, a new revitalized Armored Core with him in it.
Yes, yes.
Cool. Well, if George R. R. Martin could do it, and then if someone who is like enthusiastic about video games in general wants to do it, and Elden Ring being so successful, I feel like it makes it much more likely. You know, like it seems to have worked out swimmingly, so like maybe they're more likely to even do it. You know,
I mean, maybe every Elden Ring should be like a new fantasy author that they partner with. You know,
and then after like approximately 5 Elden Rings, maybe I'll finally understand what the story is even about.
Well, like legit know. Question. Do you think there's an expectation that George R. R. Martin comes back for Elden Ring 2? Do they have to credit him again?
I came back with 17 new god characters that will confuse you even more.
Yes. Gary, George, Ronald, Mike.
It's a coincidence. It's a coincidence.
God Ronald McDonald, you know?
Oh, man. All right. Well, we'll close up the news bag for there. We will say experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is the website. Come on down, bring a friend, tell a friend, listen to the podcast wherever you find podcasts.
All right. As always, we appreciate you listening. Thank you so much. And we will talk to you next week.
Well, maybe, actually.
Actually, good. Yeah. Programming note.
We'll try.
On the road. George is going on the road, moving.
I'm touring. So watch out, Houston.
Get
Nashville.
Your shirts. I want to, during your move, I want to know all the various landmarks or truck stops or whatever that you can play your Switch at. You know, like I want you to go on like a mini Switch tour, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to forget to charge that thing. I'm going to play like half of Sayonara Hearts and then just feel like I'm wasting my time. So.
Nah, I need you to like stop by at a Denny's at like midnight and like got to get in some Smash. You know, like I just want to see like, you know, it's like you know, like people who have like a stuffed animal that they take pictures of in front of like various landmarks, like you need to like, you know, have your Switch as you traverse the wilds out there.
Gas is expensive, so I'll just put up a sign that says, "I'll let you beat me at Smash Brothers for $5."
you could just play matches where it's like, you know, winner pays gas, you know?
Yeah. Like the Sting or something, you know, I'm just going to pool halls. I'm the shark, da, da, I'm the da, smash da, shark. Da, 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 da. Going there, fucking hat tipped low, gentlemen.
Yes, so that's true. Programming note, I guess the next couple weeks will be a little wacky, but we will be there on the other side.
Yes.
Once internet gets set up.
And a room that doesn't echo, maybe.
We'll see. Maybe. I mean, you know, it's all, you know, internet is step one, I would say.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, safe travels and Godspeed. And like I said, you know, we'll kind of play it by ear as how things go. But there'll be plenty to talk about when you get back.
Yep.
Cool. All right, everyone. As always, thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week or Ciao. 3 weeks from now or so. We'll be around, right? All right, folks. Take care.
Bye. Every time.